This is the September 21 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Ellen Dearden at AgriView. She's in Morton, Illinois. Greg Johnson joins us from TotalGrainMarketing.com out of Champaign, Illinois. And Mike Zuzulo is here with GlobalCommerceSearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, and we're in the midst of our fall fun drive. If you have not dialed in your support or made a pledge online yet, please do that. If you can, 217-244-9455. That's 217-244-BIG-WILL. Or go to willgive.org. And thank you. Let's begin, as we normally do, by getting a list of things that we should cover for the day. We'll start with Ellen Dearden at AgriView out of Morton, Illinois. What's on your list today?
I'd sure like to talk about Brazilian plantings for this year and where the weather looks to be lining up with El Nino.
Greg Johnson of Total Grain Marketing in Champaign, your list?
A couple things. It feels like the farmers have a smaller percentage of corn and beans sold ahead versus normal. Is that going to result in a little bit of a panic now that we've sold off, with farmers pulling the trigger, getting something sold for cash flow, or will they have the deep pockets and hold on until next year? And then the other thing is, the early yields here in central Illinois appear to be very good, both corn and beans. Is that what we're hearing in other parts of the state, in other parts of the Midwest?
Mike Zuzulo, GlobalCommerceSearch.com, out of Atchison, Kansas. What's on your list?
Well, Todd, the biggest focus, you know, for the grain markets have been, I think, the situation with the river levels and what the grain transportation infrastructure is going to be able to take as we get into harvest. And it's going to be a pretty messy September, it seems, especially in light of thinking that maybe the Federal Reserve was getting ready to put the hawk on the nest and let it sit a while and not raise rates anymore. But we didn't get that kind of information. So it could be a really bumpy ride the last half of September. I'd like to discuss that with the other two professionals that I really highly respect.
I will stay with you kind of on that topic area, and we'll come back to it, Mike. I'm wondering if we have experience, and I know we do, but if you remember exactly what happened the last time we had a government shutdown in October and were without USDA reports. Now, this would not affect the end of this month or the quarterly grain stocks report, the last one for the marketing year 22-23, but it could impact the October USDA crop production report. Do you recall what happened with the marketplace? I feel like it was listless and moved lower without direction because of this.
Yeah, that's what I remember as well, is that without the data, the funds and the fundamentals kind of came together thinking that the supplies were adequate, and it would kind of resonate with probably what we're seeing right now.
And then I'll follow up with you on what the Federal Reserve's up to and what your thoughts were as it was making some comments this week.
Yeah, I mean, two things. On our way into the Federal Reserve report, I thought we were on our way for a wheat-led September low as we got lower supplies continue to be mostly talked about. Actual supplies like SoVCon production numbers being dropped this week. A Russian floor price maybe going up in terms of a higher price that Russia is willing to sell at. And then potential production losses in Australia, Canada, in now Argentina due to weather. And I think we were on track for trying to carve out a low in the wheat, but I was really wanting the Federal Reserve to back away. And as I said, the hawkishness of the Federal Reserve of raising rates so aggressively, wanting them to be kind of sitting on the nest now and not wanting to raise rates anymore. But they came out and said, we're almost the exact opposite. We're going to pause here, but look for another one this year, and we're going to keep into it into 2024. And I think generally speaking for the listener, Todd, my mindset has been commodity prices are going to continue to fight bond yields and currencies because the Fed and other big central banks in the developed world are saying higher for longer on interest rate hikes. And that means more macro headwinds for longer when it comes to emerging markets, including China. And that's where the bond yields, especially if they go any higher. I'm almost of the opinion that at this point, the Fed would not mind a recession in the United States, given what they did and what they said, even though they took their GDP numbers up in their updated estimates. I'm almost of the view that they know that aggregate demand is not the issue, but that's the only thing monetary policy changes. They know that aggregate supply is the issue, and that's why we continue to battle inflation. But I think they want to hammer aggregate demand so hard that aggregate supply doesn't matter as much. And that really concerns me when it comes to the commodities and the fund investment that will remain on the sidelines if the dollar and the U.S. bond yields continue to go super high.
You're concerned if the Federal Reserve continues to move in the way that they have suggested that the funds and others will simply step to the sideline. Will that include the importers as well?
I don't know if it will or not. I think that's where the yield side of the equation, the practical matter of the rivers, the Panama Canal, and the practicality of the transportation system, because, you know, we still are at the end of the day, as of the last USDA report, at a 10-year low in stocks to use globally for the wheat. And we don't know how tight we are in corn and beans yet.
Two questions for you, and then we'll move on to others. Both of these are pertaining to wheat. You have been hopeful that wheat could lead the market higher. Has that changed this week? And then secondly, a question about Russia and the export of wheat from there, as well as the way Egypt has been purchasing wheat on the world marketplace.
Yeah, they kind of roll into one another. The part of the reason why I felt like the September could be a good month for the wheat is seasonally, and I know past performance is not indicative of future results, but I'd also say that Russia's been the major supply-demand force beating down prices. The European wheat market has had a dollar rally as of the expiration of September. It's held on to most of that this week. And at the same time, we've seen the Russians come in and looks like by the recent tenders raise their floor price from 250 to 260 a ton, maybe to 270 a ton. And what was interesting before we did Commodity Week this week was Russia is now putting a freeze, an export ban on diesel. I have heard from two sources, one in France, one in Sweden, suggesting that Russian farmers are unhappy with the low prices of wheat, and Russian farmers cannot get the rest of their harvest in because they are having difficulty getting diesel fuel. So that kind of adds to this mindset that maybe, just maybe, we're past the point now where Russia is going to keep beating down the market and maybe gives the Europeans first dibs because of the currencies and locations to get some wheat. It seems like we're in that kind of camp.
We'll come back to wheat in a bit. We'll discuss both the Australian and the Argentina prospects. Australia having a very difficult time. Now let's move on to some other areas. Greg Johnson, I would like to hear, and Ellen, from you and back to Mike as well, about what early yields feel like across the nation and in your areas in particular. Here, Greg, I think that the earliest yields we've heard have been awfully good comparatively for what farmers thought they were going to harvest this season, at least.
I agree. Yeah, a few caveats. We're only 5%, 5 to 10% harvested. So, you know, we don't want to draw, you know, irreversible conclusions, but yet that's the early trend, is that the yields here in central Illinois appear to be much better. It's a repeat of last year. We didn't think with the 6 to 7 inch rain deficit during the growing season that we could have these kind of yields. Well, we did last year, and it appears that we may be doing that again this year. The other thing is, I think there is a difference between the good, deep, dark soils that can hold what little moisture there was versus the lighter soils. We are, you know, starting to see some, you know, sub 200s on the real light soils, and some 60 bushel beans in our area on the light soils. But on the good soils, 75 bushel, 80 bushel, every once in a while, 85 bushel beans, and then 230, 240 on the corn in our area on the good, deep, dark soils. So I think there's a discrepancy between, you know, light soils and dark soils this year. But once again, based on the amount of rainfall, the yields seem to be outperforming people's expectations thus far.
Just to double check, kind of in the APH area for both corn and soybeans?
Yes, and maybe even a little bit above APH on soybeans. But corn, yeah, right at APH, which back in July, I don't think you could have got anybody to think that we were going to have anywhere close to 8 PH on corn, and now it appears that we could.
Ellen Dearden, in the Morton, Peoria area, Tazewell County, how are things?
Right in our neighborhood, very little is picked. To the south of us, 10 miles, we see a lot of activity. The corn yields that are reported are good at 8 PH, maybe a hair better. I have not heard anything about beans, but I just returned from a trip to the Delmarva Peninsula in eastern Pennsylvania. They were just beginning to see corn harvest in that area at the Delmarva Peninsula, which is a sandy area. Really had a big hot dry spell, and yields are down below 8 PH. They're hopeful that their second crop beans will be wonderful because they have been getting rains over the last 10 days. Their full season beans are not ready, and neither are the double crop beans.
So the far eastern part of the growing area, and then I would think the far western part of the growing area as well, possibly, Mike, and you can give me a better feel for this, might also be suffering and have lower yields.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think the dry land Nebraska crop and the Kansas crop, especially if it's not irrigated, is going to be in a really tough spot. I when I look at the map of USDA and I see the 198 in Illinois, I've heard the same thing Greg has heard, and the number in for soybeans. I feel like that there's some movement, potential movement upward if we hold on to these kind of yields into the end of the month. It's still a question about Iowa and Minnesota in my mind, especially given that, you know, USDA is at 200 bushels, no change versus last year. I still think that's probably too high at this point, even though I haven't gotten a lot of reports from Iowa, but eastern Nebraska, northern Missouri, those people that have tuned in and started to combine, they are as bad or worse, if not what they thought. So I think it's still about Iowa and Minnesota as far as where the national yield is, especially in the corn market.
So now, Greg, I want to come to you with a question that you wanted answered, and I'd like you to answer it for me a little bit. But we'll divide it into old crop and new crop that farmers had been slow on marketing. First, did they get the old crop corn that they had left in the bin that they clearly, after the last quarterly report, still had on hand, more than expected? Did they get that marketed? What if anything, does that do to the grain stocks numbers on the 29th of September, next Friday?
You would certainly hope that that they let loose of that in the last 60 days, because there's been such an inverse. The market has been telling farmers and elevators that you're going to take a dollar hit in corn with the inverse, $1.50 to $2 inverse in beans from where they were this summer versus the fall price. So this did not come as a surprise, but yet farmers were, especially ones that have feeding livestock, that are feeding livestock, they held on to corn until they were sure of this year's crop. And again, we weren't sure of this year's crop in July, maybe not even in August, until we started doing some yield checks in late August, early September. So there's probably still more corn out there versus a normal type environment. But with this big inverse, I would certainly think that a lot of that corn has moved in the last couple of months. And so the stocks number may be a little bit higher, but hopefully not dramatically so.
And then for new crop, have they been slow in your facility and across the whole of the TGM?
Yeah, I would say the general attitude is, I've been able to get $6 to $7 the last 2 years. Why would I want to sell corn at $5? Well, the answer is because it can go to $4.50, but we did not buy a lot of corn. I would say we're probably less than 30% sold in our area on new crop corn, maybe a little bit more on beans because the bean price has been a little bit more attractive all summer. But normally we've probably got 40% of the corn bought at this point, and I would say we're probably in the 25 to 30% range this year.
And then Mike and Ellen, I'll have you answer the second part of his question, which is if farmers need the cash flow, or do they need the cash flow, I suppose is really the question, and will these low prices spur them them to go ahead and make sales across the scale, do you think, Ellen?
I think farmers need money, but they don't think they need money. And that's a kind of a stupid comment, but I think farmers, you know, are thinking the same thing that Greg was saying, that, you know, the prices are just too darn cheap and I don't need anything right now. But I think they'll get squeezed as we get to the end of the year. There's a big carrying charge, or there's a big incentive to hold crop into January, February on the corn side, and really into January on the beans. And I think right now, guys are trying to stuff them in their own bins at home. And once that gets filled up, we're going to see a basis, I think, fall apart, particularly with the river system boogered up. And we are going to see a lot of forced selling, and that's going to be an unfortunate thing. I really pushed guys to sell their first harvested corn across the scales, because even if they had contracts, there were still some basis premiums at that stage of the game. How many of them really took that advice, I don't know.
I agree with both Greg and Ellen on where they're at. I think the thing that I've heard more and more this month, Todd, is the price for the February crop insurance in corn is so high. Producers are actually thinking about, even if they have good yields, thinking about coming in and buying calls to protect in case we have a rally going into the last part of the year when the fall prices bid. So I don't think they have a lot of interest in selling corn because of that. And so in the beans, to me, it's a little bit easier if you have storage on farm to go after more downside potential, because we've broken through some key areas. And it looks like the bean corn ratio that has been so loved by the funds is now something they don't want to be near at all. And they're liquidating that position, it seems to me. And so, you know, doing a January put and holding pat for 30 or 40 days to see if we can't get this weather pattern to change. It's not attractive to go after cash sales unless you're going to do a hedge to arrive, because many are starting to see 50, 60, 65 cent under basis in the soybeans. And that is just not going to get anybody to move on cash sales with that kind of a price. And so I'm more nervous about the futures market eroding in the beans. Why? Because we're down about 15% in beans year to date, lead month, and we're down 30 plus in corn and wheat year to date. And I think at some point the funds will want to rebalance, and that point may be now, because we're seeing the U.S. bean exports and the demand side on the crush start to really give way, and USDA is more right than wrong, it seems to me.
Yeah, we'll come back to soybeans in South America with Ellen Dearden in just a second as it relates to weather. But I do want to follow up, Mike, on something that you said, which is that farmers are interested in protecting the October harvest price, or I'm sorry, the USDA February price tag for crop insurance. Should they do that? That would be a bullish stance. Is there a reason to have that kind of stance?
You know, there is if the wheat puts a low in September, and I can make an argument still that that's possible. I think what the other thing I looked at as soon as they started asking me this was the implied volatility on corn and beans and wheat for that matter, too. It's been plummeting, and we've gotten down to 19% in an at-the-money option on a call right now in the corn at this stage of the game, Todd. And that takes you down to the lows from before we started planting. And so the options as far as cheap or expensive in a volatility mindset are very cheap. And so I don't think it costs a lot to protect it. And so in that mindset of a risk-reward mindset, you almost separate it from your cash sales and say, this is about my crop insurance, not my cash sales. But if the wheat doesn't make a low, it should give me more reason to sell my corn because I've got the call already bought. And then you kind of blend the two together would be my first impression.
So, Ellen, I'll come back to you. You can talk about risk management if you'd like, but I would like to turn your attention to South American weather, Brazilian soybeans. I've been reading, of course, that some of the long-term forecast with El Nino, particularly as it's related to Argentina, have some interesting effects. What are you hearing?
Well, I think let's talk first that CONAB has said that Brazilian corn acres will fall almost 5%. and the bean acres will rise a considerable amount as farmers may increase bean acres more than 5%. So I think we need to be looking at that and be very aware of that. So just from an acreage standpoint, we're seeing a shift. That's atypical in Brazil. Typically, if bean acres go up, corn acres will go up as well. But CONAB says that corn production will be less than 120 million metric tons. Now, USDA is at 129, so we've got a pretty big discrepancy there. They're not talking much of a difference on the bean side of things. But Brazil, currently, the northern part of Brazil is dry. The southern part of Brazil is wet. Now, in an El Nino year, that's kind of the pattern all the way through the end of the year for wet in that southern part of Brazil. I suppose we need to ask, will the area that's normally dry in our fall in the northern part of Brazil, will it stay that way and cut yields? Or will the south stay very wet like it is right now? So I think the idea of record yields in an El Nino are probably not in the works for Brazil this year. And Argentina is already dry. Typically, they'll get some rain out of an El Nino. They don't stay dry. But, I think it we've got a lot more questions in South America than what we had at this time last year, particularly in Brazil.
Do you recall when you were reading the CONAB reports, how they split up where the increase in acreage for soybeans, not geographically, but by crop and or corn, first safrinha or third, might come? I would think that there would be a huge difference if it was all in the first crop, actually, so that there would be a lot more soybean acres that might be coming on and be harvested in that Jan, Feb, March timeframe.
I really don't remember, Todd, but if the soybean acres are up in the south, they'll certainly come after it with safrinha corn. However, if it stays wet, that may be a real difficulty.
It'll be interesting to watch and see how that plays out. I do want to come back, Mike Zuzulo, to the Mississippi River at this point. And Greg Johnson, I'd like you to take this up as well. What do the issues related to the low levels now mean for our export market? And of course, we only have to look back to last year, 2022, to get an idea, I suppose.
Yeah, I'll bring up your great panel we had with your Farm Progress show and the state climatologist making the very valuable point is last year we had precip in the ground. We had moisture and we didn't have to replenish that before we replenish the lakes and the rivers and streams like we will have to this year. But the bottom line is it's starting to hit us. And the brand new grain transportation report just came out and from Cairo to the Gulf, we're seeing barges down 24% from normal, and tow sizes are down anywhere from 17 to 38% from normal. And that's adding a transit delays of 2 to 3 days. It's a lot of dollars. And I'll let Greg take it from here because he's the expert.
Greg Johnson, I'll let you pick up on logistics and moving crop around the United States, particularly into the export market, and how rail plays into that as well.
Yeah, exactly. Mike hit it right on the head. The one thing I would say is short term, it is friendly for rail loaders because the barges are so much more expensive. And with the delays, if you can get rail, there are some extremely attractive quick shipment bids. But just as in last year, it lasts for about 2 or 3 weeks. And then long term, it's negative for everybody. I mean, it just costs more to export everything. Rail rates go up, barge rates go up, everything goes up, and it just makes our commodities just that much more expensive compared to the world. So other than a short-term, two-week friendly thing for rail loaders, this low water level is long-term negative for just about everybody in the U.S. grain system.
And it does not look like it will be fixed anytime soon. How much of a problem does it really become as it relates to just basis and it widening out?
Well, the basis has already widened out in the eastern United States. There's just if you can't get it down to the Gulf, everybody wants to hit that southeast feeder market, and you know you can't force hogs and chickens to eat twice as much. They only need so much, and you have to incentivize the market to store this stuff until somebody does want it. And so the way to incentivize somebody to store it is to get the nearby price cheaper compared to the deferred price. So your spreads are widening out, your basis levels are dropping, and that's the way that the market encourages grain to stay off the market until it's actually needed.
And I'd like a comment from each of you on the cost of money and what it means to store a crop for farmers and how they should consider that as they're working through their cash marketings. I guess, Greg, I'll start with you on that one as well.
We haven't been through this for a long time. I hope everybody's doing the math. We certainly are here. If we do not sell trains in the fall and we sell that same value in January, it costs us 3 to 4 cents a bushel a month to hold on to that corn, just in interest cost, and it costs us 8 to 9 cents a bushel a month just in interest cost to hold beans. So it's the same thing for farmers. $5 corn now is better than $5 corn in January, because you can, pay off some bills and stop that interest, or put it in a 5.5% CD. So, we haven't been through this for a while, but I encourage everybody to go through those calculations and see just exactly how much that interest is costing if you don't sell that grain. It's going to be a lot harder to hold on to grain into the summer, as farmers have done the last several years, but this year it's going to cost quite a bit of money to do that.
I would ditto that, and I'd also point out that farmers' operating loans typically have gone from 3% early in 2022 to 9% now.
Anything to add, Mike Zuzlow, on this topic area?
Just to dovetail that with the idea that, we just hit a two-year yield, the highest level since 2006. It does not feel very good like it did back in 2006 to me from a standpoint of a demand-led market. And the market's really finding some strength heading into the financial crisis when it comes to commodities. And that's because the real effective exchange rate of the Japanese yen is at an all-time low. So talk about buying power on U.S. beef and U.S. corn when you think about that.
On the global marketplace, one last topic I'd like to take up are supplies that are available across the planet. And maybe I'll divide these among each of you. Ellen, if you could take soybeans, and Greg, if you could take corn, total global supply, what that really means and what it's looked like over time, and whether they're high or low or wherever. And Mike, if you could take up wheat for me, please.
I'll jump in on the soybeans. First thing I will point out is there's a big lineup in Brazil ports right now. Ships waiting to load beans. And so that, I think, has shifted the very closest nearby activity elsewhere. The U.S. would be the alternate source there. Obviously, Argentina didn't have much of a crop. I'd also point out that we can move beans, and the boys in the upper Midwest are certainly excited about prospects of railing out beans this winter to the Pacific Northwest. So that would avoid going through the Gulf. I think it will be interesting to see how this all plays out. Certainly Brazil has a big bean crop yet to move.
Greg Johnson, global supplies of corn for me.
Corn supplies are adequate, higher than last year, thanks to Brazil. Brazil took over the number one exporting country in the world. They took that mantle away from the United States. As Ellen mentioned, they are going to plant 5% less because the price is lower and their yields are nowhere close to our kind of yields on corn. So I think maybe we can get that back, but only at the cost of a lower price to get that export market back. We're just too high priced compared to the world, and we've got to get rid of some of this glut. And until we see demand pick back up, a 2 billion bushel carryout is certainly not cause for the funds or anybody else to go out and want to buy corn. So we're kind of stuck.
And Mike Suzalo, Global Wheat Supplies.
Major competitors, major exporters, USDA saying at 315 million tons, Todd, that would be a four-plus year low, 10-year lows in stocks-to-use ratios globally. Our price is about $20 to $25 cheaper than the Russian floor price, if the new Russian floor price is 270. And last thing I'd say is I think both soft red and hard red wheat acres here in this country are going down versus last year. Drought in our part of the country for hard red, and I think price and basis, the cash market's just falling apart for soft red wheat from many of the clients I talked to from Illinois to Ohio, and I don't think that incentivized them to plant much at all.
We'll close out with a final thought from each of you. Greg Johnson, I'll start with you, but I'll remind folks that it is National Farm Safety and Health Week. Be careful when you're out harvesting, and if you're on the rural roads. There is big machinery that will be there for the better part of 2 months now. They move slow, and you can come up, especially behind them, very, very quickly. Pay attention. And there aren't always stop or yield signs at every corner, so be careful as you're traveling across the Midwest, and watch out for the farm machinery. I know the farmers will be watching out for you. Greg Johnson, a final word from you today.
Okay. Yeah, the last 2 years we've had inverted markets. It sure looks like we're going to go back to the carry type markets. Farmers need to refresh themselves on what to do, the strategies to take advantage of a carry market, and that is to lock in the carry when it's there. So often we see September corn, for example, go off the board this year at 465-ish, and December corn's at a pretty good carry to that. And then December corn ends up going off at 465. And then March corn goes off at 465. So the only way to capture that carry is to sell ahead, lock in that carry, use your bins, and then deliver that corn or beans at a later time. So refresh yourself on how to take advantage of a carry market.
Mike Zuzlow of GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Your final word.
From a standpoint of getting a low in wheat in September, Todd, we just don't want a new high in the dollar. So 105.50 in the index is a key level not to go above on a weekly or monthly close. And a lot of the funds, their end of their fiscal year is the end of this month. And so be prepared for more volatility and more spreading.
Ellen Dearden from AgriView in Morton, Illinois.
We've got weakening palm oil prices, and soybean oil is really linked to palm oil and other vegetable oils, and end users substitute rather easily. With weak palm oil, weak soybean oil, it's hard for the beans to rally very much. It's more likely to see beans weaken, even despite that we could keep meal prices steady.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. We're in the midst of our fall fund drive. Please take time now, if you can, to make a gift at 217-244-9455, or we'll give. That's W-I-L-L, give.org. Our thanks go to our panelists today. They include Ellen Dearden of Ag Review out of Morton, Illinois, Greg Johnson from Total Grain Marketing in Champaign, Illinois, and Mike Zuzlow of GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.